New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
How you doing, Katie?
I almost just said I'm Ash. I almost just did what you did that one time.
Oh, that one time when you said my name for you.
Yep. I'm doing good. I'm doing much better than yesterday. In full transparency, guys, and to normalize medication and mental health, I forgot to take my meds yesterday. And we recorded, and it was not good.
An hour and a half long episode.
An hour and a half long. And literally, I ended it like apologizing multiple times because I felt so manic and just out of control. And then I realized today that I forgot to take my meds. And I was like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. So Ashley, being the gem that she is like, you know what? If you're not feeling good about like your work, let's record. We'll do that. So
I felt like my own energy wasn't up because I was so tired for whatever weird reason.
Work hard. That's why.
Oh, thanks. I passed out super early after we recorded. So when you were expressing that to me, I was like, you know what? I feel like I also didn't give it my all. Let's just re-record this. I will make the time to edit this.
I think you'll actually have less to edit now.
That will help.
Yeah.
That will help.
I do.
Before we get into like any, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have much of an update. I don't really have too much going on. I have a minor update, but if you have anything, I just want to do some Patreon shout outs first.
The only update I have is for anyone who's here from our TikTok, I really appreciate the love you guys gave Gio.
Oh,
it was really cute and it made me really happy.
Also, like, side note, for the million fucking comments that were left about this, I really wish we could pin comments to the top of videos on TikTok still. We fucking know that it's Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone. It's obviously Oliver Stone. Richard Stone is an ophthalmologist in Pennsylvania. And I don't need to get into the reasons why I was looking up ophthalmologists. That's my own medical reasons and medical history for why I have to potentially see or need to be ready to see doctors of eye disease. So just leave me alone,
You're
okay?
Like, I was looking up his name. It was 7 a.m. I didn't have my coffee. And we just accidentally said the name that was in our mind. So...
And
we got it. Please.
Please multiple stop. People commented on, I had clearly just woken up. I hadn't brushed my hair. Jokes on you. I didn't brush my hair after that either.
I also saw someone today commented on one of the other videos and was like, oh, good to see that you brushed your hair.
No, dude,
and
that was the same person. That person
I figured it
gave
was.
Me shit.
I remembered the profile picture, but I commented back and I was like, curly hair shouldn't be brushed and it has a mind of its own.
And I commented again and said I didn't actually anyway, so.
So anyway, yes, we know. TikTok.
So yes, we know.
We know.
I'm sorry. Richard
For the
Stone.
The millions of comments we get.
I hope that he at least is a good doctor and he got like some patients. I don't know. Yes, so we do know. But get on to our patrons. We need to highlight them.
Yes, yes, we do. We have two new patrons. First and foremost, we have Caitlin L., who is one of our helpful little bugs. Thank you so much, Caitlin.
Thanks, Caitlin.
We're so excited that you're here. And then one of our new absolute gems is Kyle R. Hi, Kyle.
Hi,
Thank
Kyle.
Thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you guys so much.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Truly, truly, truly. It's you. I know we keep saying it, but we are working on merch. Ashley has been making some awesome designs and we're looking stuff up. So
yes.
Thank you for your support. I
also want to remind everyone that when you are a patron, we do give you access to a private Facebook group to discuss all things podcast and non-podcast related. Mm-hmm. So that's a good incentive.
Facebook group. We do, we're starting monthly Patreon only episodes that the people, patrons, get to vote on the topics. We just put up the poll today. After chats, bonus contents. Like we're really putting a lot of time into making that more worth your while in just a variety of different ways. Our after chat that we recorded was just fun. Am I the assholes and stuff like that. So it's a bunch of different stuff, and we're always open to suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love suggestions.
You guys want to hear. Mm-hmm. My only update real quick before we get into the episode is that tomorrow, right? Today's Friday. We're recording this on Friday night. Yes. Saturday morning is the first day of the food pantry that myself and my running mate Jessica have talked about her a lot over the last year. And our group, the Manville Democrats, we spent quite some time trying to bring a food pantry to Manville.
Hell yeah.
And Jessica has been asked to be in charge of this one here in town that we're having at a local church. And tomorrow is the first day of it. And we're super excited to be able to help people in the community and help people who... Listen, everything's fucking expensive right now. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you need some help with some fucking groceries, we're here for you.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure that people are able to eat.
It's... Yeah. You need it to live. Breaking news.
Breaking news. You need food. And we want to help you.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, super excited.
New year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
So I think I'm just going to take a deep, like, deep breath.
Yeah.
It's a big episode.
It is a big
episode. It's a big topic. And we talked about yesterday how I've just like never had a more difficult time with notes. Just even like sitting down to do these notes was really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that I like about doing multiple episodes at once is that I can listen back to the old ones and be like, oh, I didn't mention this or I didn't mention that. And it lets me like sneak those into the next one.
So we got a little update corner here.
So we do have a little bit of update corner. Because last week I set out the list of suspects that included the CIA, Alan Dulles, and the mob. But when I was listening to it, I realized that I did not mention Lyndon B. Johnson and his reasonings for being on a lot of people's lists.
He definitely has a lot of issues with JFK.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's the vice president.
And a lot to gain.
Mm-hmm. And a lot to gain. Remember, JFK and his family were like, you got to make him your vice president because you got to keep your enemies close.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they kept him close and then just did nothing with him. Because notice how in the last episodes, I barely mentioned him, right?
Yeah.
Rude.
He's like, barely, when is it going to be my time?
Yeah. Like, well, what do you, he's just like sitting there like twiddling his thumbs like, well, what the fuck do you want from me? I said before, Robert Kennedy was the closest thing to a co-president we ever had, which like is kind of supposed to be the vice president's job. And that's really embarrassing. Everyone can see what's going on. It's not like he's hiding him and Bobby doing everything.
Yeah.
I also didn't mention the military industrial complex.
Mm, that's a big one.
It's a really big one. And it's something that's, you know, I was going to say the TikTok that you sent to me or today, or not the TikTok, the Instagram thing about they have mentioned the military industrial complex in China. So it's still something everywhere is worried about.
Oh, the TikTok or the was it the TikTok or was it,
was
the video
Instagram
I sent you on Instagram
about TikTok.
The US wanting to like ban TikTok?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
Right. Didn't
that
they already
app,
try
that
and do this?
App keeps me sane. Leave me alone. At this point, I don't give a fuck if they have my information. It's giving me serotonin.
There is no possible way that they have more information on me than Mark Zuckerberg does.
Yeah.
That dude has had everything of mine since I got a Facebook in ninth grade.
If you're concerned about who has people's information, Google, hello.
We did a whole episode on Google. Are you literally. Like, yeah, exactly.
The entire monolith that they are, all the AI, yeah. They have everything, babe. Everything.
Please, please. They look may as home. Well.
Look yeah. at home for your issues.
23andMe, I spit into are a tube and me? Sent it to them. Like, China's got shit.
China got shit.
So the military-industrial complex, to take it back to a really serious thing, multiple times the powers of war that be approached Kennedy with plans to attack various places, the Soviet Union, Cuba, anywhere communism was rampant, and JFK was not about it. Here is one of his most famous speeches and one of
like,
my...
Why do we want war if it's not completely necessary? Like,
right?
Please. Well, stop.
We'll get into why they want war in a second, but Money. We'll get into why JFK doesn't.
What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time.
It's one of my favorite speeches by JFK, honestly.
Did he write that himself or did he have a speechwriter?
JFK's main speechwriter was Bobby.
Oh, I feel like now that you've said it, we've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Bobby penned the speech about civil rights that a lot of people point to.
Where is this? Oh, my God.
Oh, history.
My downstairs neighbors are being so loud and I really hope I can edit it out.
Oh, I don't hear it.
Okay, good.
If that helps. In his peace speech at American University in June 1963, he declared that America would no longer be driven by the extreme anti-Russia, anti-Soviet Union propaganda machine that was driving the U.S. national security establishment. It's a really big quote. I don't think that's from history.com and that's what it says, but I'm like almost positive that it's not. It's in the sources somewhere, though. I'll make a note of it in the sources as to where that pulled from specifically.
Nice.
So in the speech, he was basically declaring an end to the Cold War and announced that the U.S. would now be moving towards an area where peace and harmony was the main focus of, like, peace and harmony with the Soviet Union and the communist world was the main focus. He wanted to try and figure it out. Kennedy wasn't just approaching peace from a moral standpoint. He was acknowledging something that was a growing concern. One that even Eisenhower, the president before Kennedy, warned the public in his last speech on the job to be wary of. The people who profited off of war. History.com.
I mean, yes.
Absolutely.
I'm still wary of them because it's only gotten worse.
He was so right. History.com says, before and during the Second World War, American industries had successfully converted to defense production as the crisis demanded. But out of the war, what Eisenhower called permanent armaments, a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions emerged. This conjunction of an immense military establishment and large arms industry is the new American experience, Eisenhower warned.
It's kind of amazing to me the amount of private, for-profit military companies there are.
It's alarming. Ooh, episode topic for sure. So the quote is, while we recognize the imperative need for this development, we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
He was not wrong.
Yeah. He cautioned that the federal government's collaboration with an alliance of military and industrial leaders, though necessary, was vulnerable to abuse of power. Ike then counseled American citizens to be vigilant in monitoring the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I have this quote. Why is it in blue?
Very smart.
Oh, yeah, he is. Oh, this is just an interesting quote about recommending restraint in consumer habits, particularly with regard to the environment. So, like, he was, like, really looking ahead. He's actually really interesting. So the quote is, as we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. Oh, this is why. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without asking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage.
Okay, sir.
Solid quote. Yeah. That's, I was probably like, oh, this has nothing to do with JFK at all. I just like this quote.
That's probably why it's in blue. It's a great fucking quote.
Kennedy's disdain to go to war during these times created a huge loss of money for these very people Eisenhower was warning about. And that created a huge motive for the CIA and for others who profited off of war. A month before the assassination, Kennedy actually planned on pulling out of Vietnam, which would have been another huge loss for the complex. I like how you call it the complex. America has so many.
So many complexes, so- America. You should really unpack that in therapy.
Absolutely. I wish it as a country could go to therapy.
Listen. When we're in charge, therapy mandated for everyone, you're welcome.
Free therapy. My
God, we would be a much, much more
such a better peaceful place.
And calm and chill world if everybody just went to fucking therapy.
Seriously. Once Johnson was president, obviously we all know this, he overturned that decision. And that decision was overturned very obviously because there's a literal document that JFK had like been like, these are my plans for after I come back from president. Why do I make JFK sound? That is not at all how he sounds.
Nah, he's more like, my fellow Americans.
I know. There was a whole time for a while where like I just like couldn't stop talking like JFK. I can't get it.
I hear it almost every day at work.
I can't get it. There was a while where I like couldn't stop talking like a Kennedy. It's like a year ago.
It's a very like transatlantic accent, to be honest.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Mm-hmm.
Which is my favorite.
JFK had these plans to vacate Vietnam, and then you can like see the handwriting editing of Johnson's where he just like crosses it out. Like fully crosses it out.
I just had a thought real quick to go back to what we were just talking about with the transatlantic accent. Of course they sound like that. Their father was in the pictures. He was in the movies.
Yeah.
And that was popular. Of course they all spoke like that with all their training that they had to go through for these positions. Of course. Okay.
And they're like big old fake teeth.
Yeah.
Lots of dental like, work.
That clicked in my mind while you were talking. So sorry. Had to get it out. Now let's continue.
No, I love it. That's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. Knowing how controversial the Vietnam War was, some people wonder, was that the final straw for the military-industrial complex? Did they take JFK out to put someone in who favored war and making them money?
I mean, I wouldn't put it past them.
It's a solid, I see the motive.
It exists.
Something else that's pretty odd that's in Chicago, just before JFK died, there was another assassination attempt in his life.
I feel like because I heard this yesterday. I can't give the same genuine reaction to, like, just now finding this out. But I had no idea that there was another attempt on his life.
Yeah, it's a lot of people wanted him dead.
Yeah, I mean, this, what the fuck? I mean, he seems like a, you know, not a horrible human being.
So no, like, he seems like a pretty even keeled kind of dude. I mean, he's on a lot of meth, but that's the other thing, guys. He's,
I mean, it wasn't so illegal back meth. Then.
This doctor is just shooting him up with meth and hormones.
Dr. Feelgood over here.
Oh, that was it. There it is. That was because it has like the Boston in it also.
Oh, right? The Boston mm-hmm. influence in it. Thank yeah. you.
3 weeks before the parade in Texas, JFK was scheduled to get into Chicago. That's missing words. 3 weeks before the parade in Texas, JFK was scheduled to fly into Chicago the morning of Saturday, November 2nd. There we go. In order to go to the Army Air Force football game at Soldier Field and ride in a parade.
Oh.
Hmm. And just like in Dallas, newspapers printed JFK's detailed travel plan from O'Hare to the Loop leading up to the parade.
I genuinely feel like that is such a security problem.
Right? I don't think that that's a... We never know.
I was going to say, that's not something that gets printed in the news anymore.
No, I think at most it's like you find out they're coming to this area, but you don't know like where they're going to be at every moment of the day.
Oh, he's going to take a left down Sycamore and then a right up Pine. Yeah, I don't know why I went with trees.
Because everywhere has trees. Actually, I believe one of them is elm.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
We'll look at the picture later in the episode. We'll find out.
Okay.
Kennedy hater, right-wing nutjob Thomas Valley had ensured he'd be off of work that day to use his skills as an expert marksman to take out JFK.
Okay. He was an expert marksman, or was that being sarcastic? Oh,
no, he was.
Gotcha. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He would have been fucked. However, he was arrested with an M1 rifle, a handgun, and 3,000 rounds of ammo.
Jesus.
Which really feels... Talk about overkill. Yeah. It really feels like he was planning to kill more than just JFK.
Yeah, it was going to be a massacre.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is when we went off on our tangent last night about what was the... first gun massacre in the United States.
It was in the 20s, in case anyone was curious.
It was in the 20s, yeah.
But that wasn't the only person trying to kill Kennedy that day.
Of course not.
No. Just like multiple people a day.
When is it ever simple?
Oh my God, did you see that thing about Elon Musk being like, the threat of my assassination is like very high?
Like, I did not like, see that.
He's like trying to brag that people want to kill him, which it isn't. Like, no one is like making active threats. Like, it's not true.
It's like, I said I'll fucking eat you when it's time to eat the rich, but like, honey boo, nobody gives a fuck about you.
He's like trying to make himself seem really important.
And it's like so God, many people like, want to kill me. At this point, you're like the annoying fucking gnat that won't leave us alone.
Just go away. Like, you're not JFK status. Two people don't want to kill you in one day. People aren't actively trying. Go away.
They're not taking time off of work to try to kill you.
No one's scheduling that. No one's taking PTO to kill Elon Musk. Oh my gosh, that was so funny. Just had, ooh. Ashley really just made me laugh so much. We needed to pause. A phone call. So we were talking about how that wasn't the only person trying to kill Kennedy that day. A phone call to federal agents from a motel manager detailing what she saw in a room rented by two Cuban nationals. Quote, Which feels a little racist, just throwing that out there. Quote.
How did you know they were Cuban?
Right? Because she just saw them. Well, okay, wait. If she's the manager, maybe she saw their ID and passed. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. So the quote was, had seen lying on the bed several automatic rifles with telescopic sights with an outline of the route that President Kennedy was supposed to take in Chicago that would bring him past that building, said former Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden.
Wow.
That's really incriminating.
That's suspicious.
That was just in my mind. Like, that literally couldn't be anything else. Bolden, the first black agent ever assigned to protect the president, says, nice. Quote, the morning of the game, the special agent in charge of the Chicago office called the White House and recommended the president cancel his trip to Chicago. Bolden says in an interview with ABC News 7 in Chicago. He goes on to say, the article goes on to say, news reports stated that Kennedy didn't show because he was ill or because of a diplomatic crisis. Which, like, smart move. They're like, I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of knowing that, you know, they thwarted my plans.
Not telling us the real reason.
Yes. Official investigations of JFK never determined why the president canceled Chicago on November 2nd, but in his first interview in 44 years, former Agent Bolden said JFK stayed away because of an imminent threat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one followed up on that at all.
So they knew that day that both of those threats were there?
Yeah. So, like, that guy got arrested. The first one got arrested. And I don't know what happened with that. But then no police came to look at the hotel room or interview the motel manager who just saw, like, the most incriminating thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that could be.
You didn't go to see who the guns were registered to, like, nothing.
Get the names of who checked into the motel.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
Like, you don't want to maybe potentially look into that in case they tried to do it again.
And
in a few weeks.
None of this information was passed on to Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. It was deemed important enough to cancel the trip, but not important enough to investigate. And obviously, Bolden's not, like, the person in charge of making sure the Chicago PD followed up. It's Chicago. And because of that, people immediately think of the mob. Because otherwise, Chicago PD at the time, people often link with the mob. But one would assume otherwise they would have good reason to go and check out this pretty legitimate threat on the president. So some people have alleged and pointed to this as lack of investigation, as evidence of the mob's involvement, like from preventing the cops from going to look into their hitmen. A theory. No evidence to prove it, but no evidence to prove otherwise. ABC News goes on to say when the Warren Commission began investigating JFK's assassination, Bolden says he attempted to inform members about Chicago plot and misconduct by his fellow agents. We'll get into this deeper in the next episode as part of a leading theory, but Bolden claims that many of his Secret Service agents showed up to work intoxicated frequently after drinking all night.
I mean, we've seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, when was it wasn't that long ago that we heard about Secret Service agents, like, being drunk somewhere. Like, not, like, 5-6 years ago?
I think so.
Something like that.
It was definitely within the Trump or Obama administration. Might have been the Trump administration for sure. I can't remember at this point, but it was recently.
Yeah.
During that time, Bolden himself was arrested and prosecuted for soliciting a bribe from a counterfeiter and served 6 years.
Oh no.
He claims it was a setup to silence him. As the main witness has since recanted.
Ooh, okay, yeah. I mean, I believe it. I believe it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to get on to the official story of the assassination, the last day of JFK's life. It's more or less what everyone who's looked into the day can agree on. So JFK was in Texas for a parade, which was part of a 2-day, 5-city tour throughout the state. And this was Jackie's first appearance in public in a while. I had briefly mentioned this in the Kennedy Curse episode, trigger warning for loss of a child. In August of 1963, Jackie Kennedy went into labor prematurely and gave birth to Patrick Bouvier Kennedy, who sadly died 3 days later due to respiratory distress syndrome. When that happened, the Kennedy marriage became the lie that they had been telling the world. When JFK got the news, for the first time ever, on his own accord, he rushed to his wife's side and was there for her the entire time.
Oh, that's so much different than the first time she was pregnant.
A very drastic change from the last child they lost of, there's nothing I can do, I'm sure she'll be fine. People around them remarked on how close the two were afterwards, holding hands constantly, whereas before there was often a distance both physically and emotionally. I really, 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 really don't think that Jackie was involved in the assassination. So
I don't think I ever, ever thought that about her.
Dude, in the comments on some of our TikTok, people are out there.
Mm.
Apparently.
I mean, I've definitely seen some... Y'all, I'm sorry. If you believe in QAnon, this is not the podcast for you.
JFK Jr. is dead.
JFK Jr.
I'm going to do an episode about it. Dead.
He's not coming so back. Dead. So dead. He's not coming
so
back.
So dead.
Please go to therapy.
But maybe first, like, a deprogrammer.
Yeah. Yes. Because, like, I'm sorry, baby, but you're in a cult.
Dude, I love reading about people who deprogram cult members.
That would be fascinating.
Oh, Patreon episode. Patreon episode. Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because JFK was a man of the people and the weather was so nice, it was decided to not have the clear dome on top of the convertible that JFK was in. Not that it would have stopped the bullet by any means at all. And it's said that JFK himself requested the Secret Service not ride, sitting, or standing at the side of his vehicle. So he didn't want him to be surrounded and unseen. He wanted to be waving at people, kissing babies.
And it's like, I get it, but babe, security.
Security. I also forgot to mention this in the last, when we recorded this before, the night before, like, the last trip that they were in, it's alleged that JFK said to Jackie, last night would have been a great night to kill the president because of how little security there was.
Well, damn.
Yeah.
The irony.
It gets more ironic when I mention the last words that JFK heard and said. The route that he was on is maximized to allow the most amount of people to see the president, which resulted in at least 20,000 windows. There's a memo that essentially says, we realized how many windows there were and that we wouldn't be able to cover them all, so we just did nothing.
Yep, that sounds like a job well done.
Good work. Great. Great job.
Oh my God.
And we'll talk more about this in the next episode as well when we get into, like, the theories and the Warren Commission and all of that stuff. But there's a lot of signs of negligence on the CIA and FBI's part.
Yeah.
And it's shit like that. That had JFK been fine, no one ever would have thought twice about it. But because he was shot in front of everyone, the CIA was like, oh,
yeah.
Gotta look into that now. So that adds a whole other layer. Like, the CIA has all of this shit they're trying to hide, and the FBI, same, and the Kennedys, same. So everyone's hiding shit, and it makes all of this so much more complicated.
Everyone's very suspect.
Yeah. The route that the parade was on also included a super weird fucking turn at the end. So, listeners, I'm going to paint you a little picture, but feel free to go over to our social media for the map that I have sent Ashley that we will be looking at.
Yes.
The car had just taken a full 90-degree right turn and driven maybe a block. As the car is facing the book depository, where on the sixth floor, Lee Harvey Oswald is said to be, as this is where he worked. It's also lunchtime, so no one else was there on the floor working. Okay. So, like, that's just interesting.
Yeah.
That would have been a prime and easier shot for the person in that sniper's nest to take. However, had he done it then, it would have completely given away his location. And I had never thought about that, and no one had ever pointed that out to me before until I listened to last podcast on the left episode about it.
Oh, their series is great.
It is so good. And they were like, obviously, Oswald, as a trained Marine, which we get into his history a little bit later in this episode, would know not to do it then, even though it's an easier shot. And I was like, that's really fascinating. No one has ever brought that up before. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
The parade takes a sharp left that isn't a full straight turn. The road slightly curves down, which also like causes
a bit more than a 90-degree angle, and then it goes down.
Yeah, it like goes. we'll see the picture. I don't know why I'm driving it as if this is
recorded. And like I'm literally looking at the map.
I'm doing hand motions for the wrong
people. I don't need your hand motions, Katie.
This causes the parade to also slow down. Mm. Just as the car approached, a man named Abraham Zapruder stands up and begins to record the last trek of JFK's parade trip. At this point, the Secret Service like thought they were clear. They're at the end of the parade. They've cleared out, for the most part, the obvious spots where a sniper would be. The crowd is
bridge that goes over the road.
They've got the bridge. Yeah, they've got the bridge that goes over, and no one is allowed to be on that. It's a smaller crowd. They're like, whoo. Everyone's just kind of like slouching a little bit more now because there like aren't a lot of people.
Well, you know what's interesting to me now, like looking at this, because I now have a second map that shows the last part of the motorcade. And after you make that turn onto Elm Street,
it is
Elm Street, because you've got the obvious bridge where somebody could shoot from. Okay, mm-hmm. They've cleared that. You have a park on one side, and then on the other, it looks like a big space of trees, sidewalk, parking lot, but then you've got this tall ass building. I really think that from looking at this, it's fucking obvious that that's a vantage point. Somebody should have checked it out.
It's interesting that you say that, because there are witnesses who like say that they saw Oswald sniper. Mm-hmm. And thought it was the Secret Service. Like, there's one, and I get to this a little bit later, but there's one witness who comes forward and says, like, that he was there with his kid, and he looked, like, over to the person he was with and was like, hey, do you want to see a Secret Service agent? And pointed to Oswald's rifle.
Yo, I'm like, why did a Secret Service agent not clear that building?
Yeah.
Like, you may have known that you didn't have enough people to cover every fucking window on this route, but that is such an obvious vantage point. A giant standalone building right at the end of the route. Oh, they should have checked that out. And the fact that regular people just thought that it was already Secret Service agents. Fuck, man.
Yeah, and we'll get to that.
Bad.
It's so bad. So, you know, conspiracy theorists and people who are wondering are like, is that negligence? Or
purposeful.
On purpose. Hmm. So Abraham Zapruder starts recording, and the Zapruder film is a huge thing that comes into play. It's the recording of the president dying, and it is fucking gnarly. I don't know if you've ever watched it, but I've watched the whole thing, and it's gnarly. It's 12:30 p.m. when the first shot is fired. If you ask the Warren Commission, they would say Lee Harvey Oswald fired his first shot. If you ask James W. Douglas, he would say the sniper crossfire began. If you ask any fellow X-Files fans, such as Ashley and I, we'll tell you the cigarette-smoking man completed his mission from the sewer below. the trajectory is impossible. People stop thinking that that's a possibility. There are some people who think that that may have been where the sniper is.
Stop! No.
That is what they say on A Rich Man's Trick in that YouTube video people keep mentioning.
Yeah.
They okay, say so that stop it was someone mentioning in the sewer.
People, please.
Stop. It's insane. That'll also probably like, be no. a Patreon episode because it's going to take me a year to fact check that whole thing. The official story is that 3 shots were fired. So 1 shot missed, and we know that because there's a nick in the side of the road that a man jumped away from, and that he's believed to get an injury from like a break off of the bullet after it hit the like a ricochet piece okay. of the bullet.
Okay.
The next shot is honestly up for debate, as there are discrepancies between reports as to where it entered, but the Warren Commission says that it went into the Kennedy's upper back, just to the right of the spine, from a downward angle, exited from his lower throat, then continued into Connolly's back, out his chest, hit his wrist, and lodged into his thigh.
Okay. I need to pull up that picture because I remember looking at it last night and being absolutely fucking perplexed as to how this happened. It's got one angle going into Kennedy, and then the shot comes out at an angle going in a different direction, out his front, and then goes into the Secret Service agent in front of him, and then
that's the juts, governor.
The governor, sorry. Governor Connolly. In front of him, juts over to the side and comes out not where it went in, and then goes down into his hand. Like, we're gonna post this up online, but it looks impossible.
Yes,
it looks absolutely impossible. I don't know who drew this, but they're wrong. that's not real.
Yeah, it is important to note that this so-called magic bullet, which people like to call it, was encased in what's known as a full metal jacket, meaning it was designed to be able to go through quite a few things without the bullet itself taking damage and without stopping.
Okay.
So you'll see photos that we'll post next week, and I'll probably send them to you soon, where the bullet that they have in custody is, like, not very damaged, and, like, that's very confusing. Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't explain the descriptions and the discrepancies of the entrance of the wound and how they're changed from report to report. And it also doesn't change the third bullet, the fatal shot that sent brain matter and skull fragments all over everyone in the car. It's also possible that the difference in chairs that Connolly and JFK were sitting in could explain some of the trajectory issues. Connolly was actually sitting in a fold-out chair that wasn't a part of the car and was a little bit lower than the rest of the chairs.
I was just gonna ask if the back seat was raised, because for some reason I remember seeing a different angle from this picture and seeing that he was lower in the front. Yep. Yeah,
so he was like, well, a little bit lower, weird. And to the right. So it's important, you know, this image that you have is from Oliver Stone, who's like adamant that the magic bullet theory isn't true. And then there are other images from other people who are like, no, it is definitely possible. We'll get into this more next episode because it's highly argued. Tons of guns and shooting people. Shooter people. Gun people? Gun nuts? I don't know what to call you guys. I'm sorry. Second Amendment lovers have great arguments for both sides. But I'll be honest, my issue with this official story, as is many others, doesn't sit entirely on the so-called magic bullet theory. Mm-hmm. If it was proven to be true, I would still have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
There are witnesses who said they saw Oswald's rifle in the 6th floor. There are cops who ran into the depository who, because of a puff of smoke from the window, there's like a shot definitely came from there. But was it the shot, the fatal shot? And the discrepancies really come into that one, and that we'll get into more next week. Between shot 1 and shot 3, 8.4 seconds passed. Many people have alleged and speculated that had it not been for the back brace that JFK had to wear, taking cover would have been much easier for him to do, and it could have potentially saved him from the third shot. Which is crazy.
I never knew until we started doing this and you started giving me timelines and history and everything. I did not know that he wore a back brace, so I've always thought that this is like fucking insane, but that makes so much sense. Like back then it was basically a corset. That shit is so hard to move in.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been able to.
And to bend at the hips, like that's, yeah. Yeah,
he wouldn't have been able to do it. Restricted
movement, yeah.
And Jackie wouldn't have been able to get him to bend over sideways, like mm-hmm. over her fully because of that. So first we're going to follow Kennedy's body. Kennedy was rushed to Parkland Hospital where 21 witnesses see a massive hole in the back of Kennedy's head.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Which tracks with the Zapruder film and eyewitnesses' accounts of everyone at the scene. At a press conference there, one of the doctors repeatedly describes the hole in the back of JFK's head as an exit wound. The president is pronounced dead, but no one is told. Until LBJ is immediately sworn in as president and on Air Force One when we get the infamous photo of Jackie covered in JFK's blood. Her direct quote was, "I want them to see what they did to him." For the first time ever, two presidents are on Air Force One together, one of them underneath in a casket and one above just having received promotion. Like, what a weird environment to be in.
Yeah. Like, how are you? It's not joyous. But then you see in those pictures,
some people are pretty fucking happy. And then Jackie Kennedy is just like the most disassociated I think I've ever seen anyone in my life.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. Now we're going to go back in time a little bit. While all of that was going on, what Oswald was up to. Immediately after the shots, Oswald is claimed to have left the rifle and the three spent shells, walked downstairs from the sixth floor, ducked into the lunchroom, buys a soda, and goes to leave.
My God!
And it's funny that he's, like, buying a soda because in the sniper's nest, allegedly there's, like, some chicken and some cans of soda. So, like, Oswald loves soda, apparently.
Okay.
Like, it's just like weird details about soda thrown into this a lot. It's very interesting. As Oswald is exiting, he's met by a police officer and his boss, who are looking for people who don't belong in the building. Oswald's boss vouches for him, and he leaves, where he hops onto a bus, but the bus isn't going away from the scene of the crime. It's like, or he walks seven blocks and then hops on a bus, but the bus is going back the blocks that he just walked.
He got on in the wrong direction?
Yep. So he gets off and starts walking. Well, I mean, you didn't do that after assassinating the president. He's no. He's a little, you know, confused. He's a little out of it. So he gets off the bus and he starts walking. He takes a taxi to the boarding house he's been staying in and he grabs a handgun. At this point, Oswald is the only person who left the book depository. So now the police are like, wait, oh my God, maybe it was someone who worked here. Mm-hmm. And they gather everyone and they're like, oh, wait, this is the only person who left. And they send out Oswald's description. Officer J.D. Tibbett spots Oswald and is like, what's up? Because he matches the description. Oswald is able to play it semi-cool at first, but ultimately shoots and kills the officer. By doing so, he's just drawing more and more attention to himself.
Yeah.
Which I know it's crazy to believe, but being in Texas doesn't automatically make gunshots inconspicuous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially after a president was just murdered.
Yeah, in the same area.
Just a few blocks away. Oswald then ducks into a movie theater without buying a ticket. Again, more crime. Which is like, this is the weirdest crime spree end ever. Yeah.
The strangest progression. Usually people are like progressing in their aggressiveness. He went, I'm going to do two murders and then I'm going to go steal
a movie. Did you guys know that murdering the president is a gateway crime to not paying for movies? The cops find him there, drag him out, and arrest him. Now, Big Bad Texas is really fucked up. And I honest to God think that this may have been the bring back of the idea of a good guy with a gun in Texas, because they got really weird and old school with how they treated Oswald. There's no tapes or transcripts of their conversations that they had with him over the like 2 days that he was there, day and a half, which people point to being weird. But I'm also over here in 2022 and the cops are murdering people on camera. Mm-hmm. So that's not that weird that they were like bad with records in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. That's not surprising. Obviously, it was a media circus. And when it was time for Oswald to be transferred from the county to the county jail, it was packed. Normally, these transfers happen at night, but it's on record that the Dallas police had decided to change the transfer to the morning for the sake of the news outlet's cameras. A president had just been shot in their city, and they needed to make a thing of it.
Oh, God.
As Oswald is being brought out from the basement, there's only supposed to be police officers and media, and they're even saying that on film just a few minutes before. Nightclub owner Jack Ruby steps out in front of everyone and shoots Oswald in the stomach on live TV.
Shit.
Oswald was brought to the very same hospital JFK died in just 2 days before, where he also passes. Yeah. That's another, like, there's just so many levels to how weird this is. Mm-hmm. Everything is already so crazy. Like, how could this happen? Ruby claims that he had entered into emotional blackout and killed Oswald to spare Jackie the grief of having to testify. In his trial, Ruby denied the charge, maintaining that he was acting out of patriotism. He's like, he killed the president, so I killed him. America. Texas. In March 1964, he was found guilty and sentenced to death. The Texas Court of Appeals overturned his death sentence.
Damn.
And was scheduled to grant him a new trial because, according to Texas state law, an oral confession of premeditation made while in police custody, quote, end quote, should have been ruled inadmissible. I'm not exactly sure why.
Yeah, I don't understand the reasoning behind it, but okay.
It violated a Texas criminal statute. I'm not sure what the circumstances were. Maybe because he was like under duress or something.
Maybe.
But before the new trial could happen, he died of cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
All of these things are building blocks to the most unbelievable story out there.
Mm-hmm.
If we lived in a world where JFK lived and someone wrote this as like some weird alternate universe story, no one would believe it because none of this shit makes, when you put it all together, it's unbelievable.
It doesn't make sense.
It's crazy to think. So let's talk about Lee. Who is this random guy? Because of all the people that wanted JFK dead and who had the armies to do it, this random fucking dude alone is claimed to be the one who succeeded. And also did it at work in a building filled with people.
Yeah. That's fucking unhinged.
No one was on the floor with him because it was lunchtime, but like there's people above and below him. Anyone
could have walked in.
Yeah. And also, it's a lot. The Warren Commission report describes him as dealing with isolation, frustration, and failure. Rude. He appeared to have a great difficulty finding a meaningful place in the world.
I mean, I get it.
Relatable, honestly. I mean, it is like a white man to go off and shoot people because of that feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
Just saying. He spent time in an orphanage and had a difficult childhood. And when I say difficult, I mean really fucking violent. And when I say violent, I mean he was really fucking violent. Mm. Reports of chasing his brother with a knife. What? And hitting his mom.
The audacity.
Right? But his mom, who was a typical narcissist who doted on him, constantly underplayed his violent outbursts. After skipping a ton of school, he was sent to a home for children, where a psychiatrist said he had a potential for explosive violence.
Oh, really?
Oswald then later was put into a New York institution for disturbed boys. His mom, refusing to acknowledge the real problem, took him out and back to New Orleans, where they were from. It was like a disgusting Eric Cartman and his mom dynamic. Like, she just fucking doted on him. Yeah. And he was an asshole.
That's so weird.
At 14.
Uncomfy.
I hate it. I hate it. It's bad. And also, like, kind of the making of a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who's, like, listening, who listens to true crime or, like, follows crime, like, this is the story of a man who would shoot the president.
This is all of the red flags. Every single one.
At 14, Oswald started openly declaring his interest in communism. At a time where people were being blacklisted all over the place for any semblance of connection to communism, but Oswald was able to just do whatever. Many people point to this as suspicious, but Oswald was also just a fucking 14-year-old kid. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever.
Maybe we should have cared.
We should have. But that's kind of like, people are like, that's crazy. And a lot of people are like, he was just a fucking crazy kid with a history of being in and out of institutions. You know, no one was thinking he was some Russian spy. At 17, he joined the Marines, which is really interesting because after 3 years of being openly into communism, he joins the Marines who are actively fighting communism.
Right? Like, that's so weird. That's suspicious.
That's interesting. Where, after only a little bit, he was able to hit a 10-inch target from 200 yards away 4 out of 5 times.
Shit.
And ended up training to being able to hit that at, like, 400 yards away. I don't know how many times, but, like, he could do that.
That's absolutely bonkers.
He was a solid shot for the Marines. Things were going kind of okay. He wasn't popular, but it wasn't horrible. He had a nickname. And then he shot himself in the arm.
Oh, no.
He was fucking around with a gun that led him to literally shooting himself, which got him in trouble, demoted him down to private. And honestly, that's an appropriate response.
Mm-hmm.
You should be fucking with guns, you idiot. Gun safety is so important. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
That's when Ruby started getting back into Russian and Marxism and started learning the Russian language, studying it in the language school of the Marines. That's not something that Marines had access to unless they had something to do in the Soviet Union for the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, we're still in the Red Scare. And that is genuinely very weird that he could be in the American Armed Forces studying Russian shit. That's definitely that one. I'm like, yes, okay, suspicious. Then one day he says he has to go take care of his mom. But actually, he leaves for the Soviet Union with plans to defect from the United States.
Oh.
He goes to the U.S. embassy and openly announces, I want to renounce my citizenship and tell the USSR everything I know. I was a Marine. What's up? And the embassy was just like, okay, whatever. But nothing really goes from there. The Soviet Union was not that interested in Lee Harvey Oswald. So, no thanks. The direct quote was like, there's nothing he could say that swallows heaven already sung to the world.
Oh.
It's just like, no, we know everything. You're not important. You shot yourself in the arm, and we know that because we've got spies everywhere.
They're like, you're not even near high enough of a rank.
Yeah. We have so many higher spies.
You got demoted.
Yeah. Exactly. Oswald wrote in what he called his historic journal, I must leave the country as my visa expires. I am shocked. 7 p.m., I decided to end it. When he, his tour person that, like, everyone gets a kind of overseer when they come to see the Soviet Union as a tourist, when he comes at 8, he will be shocked to find me dead. Oswald attempted, heavy air quotes, to take his own life with what has been referred to by a few sources as a very superficial cut on his wrist that posed no threat to his life. He was sent to an asylum for 3 days, but while in the psych ward, the leader of the Soviet Union was actually in the U.S. Oh. meeting and talking about shit. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't send a U.S. Marine citizen back to the U.S. with cuts all over his wrists. That looks bad. That's a story. That's very bad. So they extended his visa to stay, but didn't make him a citizen.
Okay. They're like, we don't want you forever.
Yeah, they're like, all right, whatever.
Please get the fuck out.
So he ended up staying for about 3 years. He got married and had a baby, but Russia wasn't the dream he expected it to be, and it wasn't treating him like the special somebody he assumed he would be for being a U.S. Marine who defected. Fortunately for him, Oswald never actually gave up his U.S. citizenship. He never filled out the actual paperwork. He just sort of like Michael Scotted it and was like, I declare I'm no longer a citizen, and gave him his passport and left. But like, that's not how you do it. You don't just like, you have to, there's paperwork, bro.
Yeah.
Since he never filled it out, him and his wife were able to come back. The U.S. issued Oswald what's known as a repatriation loan, which is given to destitute Americans abroad to come back home, which is suspicious. Mm-hmm. But when you read the Warren Commission's reason, it's actually really funny. It turns out that he was given this because other countries seeing him as an example of America was embarrassing for us as Americans. The quote is, his unstable character and prior criticism of the United States would make his continued presence in the Soviet Union damaging to the prestige of the United States.
Ooh!
Yeah.
They're like, get the fuck back here. You're making us look like clowns.
Yeah, he's like, just so embarrassing. They're like, oh my God. Okay, come back. Just fucking come back. Fine. Lee gets back to the U.S.
Don't leave again.
Yeah, get in here and shut the fuck up. Lee gets back to the U.S. and things start to get really bad. He begins hitting his wife. He has difficulties keeping a job. And he struggles maintaining friendships. So, once again, he returns to an interest in communism. Because it's the 50s, Oswald is able to order a gun through a magazine with a false name.
Oh, wow.
And as it turns out, he had a pretty big plan for the rifle. No, I'm not talking about his plan to kill JFK yet. Oswald's wife said he intended to kill a right-wing activist and retired army officer, General Walker.
Oh.
April 10th of 1963, Oswald fired, but the bullet was moved after hitting a windowsill and missed Walker's head by an inch. I wonder if he, like, felt it. You know?
Whiz by.
Like, whoosh. Oh, the fear. The Dallas Police Department investigation came up cold, and Oswald, who had already been flagged by the FBI for just his whole fucking deal, evaded further scrutiny. Fast forward a few weeks before the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Oswald takes a trip to Mexico City, apparently to obtain a visa that would allow him to defect to Cuba. Which is really interesting because communism sucked in Russia, but the idea maybe it's like dope on the beach. Which,
I mean,
I guess maybe. It's worth maybe. A shot, dude. He's like, maybe Russia was just too cold. That maybe that was the problem. It's not that I suck. It's that Russia was cold. So he says that he wants to stop in Cuba on the way to the Soviet Union. But after talking with, you know, his family and his friends, what he really wanted to do was stay in Cuba. He was told that by the embassy that it would take weeks for authorization and to come back tomorrow and we'll get it all going. He responded with, the FBI is after me. like really nervous and sketchy. Which is not correct. They were watching him, as I said before, but they weren't after him.
Yeah.
Very big difference. When things didn't work out, he returned to the United States. Ooh, you know what? I need to pause. During this time in Mexico, there are CIA declassified records about phone calls about Oswald, mentioning Oswald. And people believe that some of the declassified documents that the government still has is about what they found out about Oswald during this time. They actually knew a lot more of what he did here than they're letting on.
Okay.
And that information should be coming out in just a couple days from Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. When things didn't work out at this embassy, he returned to the United States, where his wife's friend was able to get him a job at the Texas School Book Depository, overlooking Dealey Plaza. This trip to Mexico, however, finally meant that the FBI was going to join the CIA in watching Lee Harvey Oswald. FBI agent James Hostie was the dude put in charge of him and was speaking to all of his friends. Which it does make sense, because after every spectacle he made about being the type of person the Red Scare was about, they're finally thinking, all right, dude, we're fucking looking at you. Here is your attention, okay? Here you go. We see you. The FBI wrote Oswald off as not a threat, which is funny because he had already tried to kill General Walker and was eventually going to be involved in the shooting of JFK. The thing to note now, though, is we don't know why Lee Harvey Oswald would want to kill JFK specifically.
Mm-hmm.
However, in a journal released in 2016, a journal, the Historical Journal of Oswald, as he called it, had a hit list of people that just said, "I will kill," at the top. It included General Walker, Richard Nixon, but at the very top of the list was Texas Governor Connally, who was sitting in front of JFK in the car.
Oh.
Truly, this is just another thing that makes all of this so fucking weird. Of all of the people who hated JFK, who wanted him dead, who had a hit list that JFK wasn't even on, Oswald is the one who successfully did it. Like, that's fucking weird. And we're not clear on his motive, and we never will be, because it died with him.
Yeah.
And we don't have transcripts of the interview. Like, it's all so weird. To answer that question, we fast forward to after the assassination. Now, according to Texas state law, the body of JFK should have stayed in Texas. And Jackie wasn't about to leave her husband behind, and LBJ wasn't about to leave a crying widow behind, because that looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
So JFK came with them. LBJ also needs to tackle what the fuck just happened. So he assembles what is now known as the Warren Commission, named after Justice Earl Warren, who was the head of it. Any reasonable person would say that the Warren Commission was started to find out the truth. However, LBJ had something a little bit different to say.
Mm.
Quote, "The public must be satisfied that Oswald was the assassin, that he did not have Confederates who are still at large, and that the evidence was such that he would have been convicted at trial."
It's really hard to do an investigation when you're not being impartial.
No, and number two goes on to say, "Speculation about Oswald's motivation ought to be cut off, and we should have some basis for rebutting the thought that this was a communist conspiracy, or, as the Iron Curtain Press is saying, a right-wing conspiracy to then blame it on the communists."
Mm.
Unfortunately, the facts on Oswald seem... Oh, it starts to get cut off. All right, I'll have to find the rest of that. But it's about Oswald. That's the focus. And we will get into the Warren Commission and what they found next week.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is crazy. Crazy, Katie. Crazy.
It's crazy.
All these people being like, why do we care in our comment section? I fucking care because I didn't know any of this. I am learning. Thank you.
I also wanted to make a video about that, but I don't know how to quite phrase it yet. But if the government knows that we're just like, who cares, whatever, they're not going to tell us anything. If they know that we're going to accept that, then that's what they're going to give us.
Yeah.
We have to hold them accountability. And accountability can't start or just be for one action. Accountability has to be for each individual actions. Mm-hmm. So I kept seeing people being like, well, why should I care about this when, you know, this, this, and this is going on? And I want to be like, because it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's all the same shit. They're fucking us over because we just let them. Because we say they're not going to tell us, so fuck it. And that's like, why movements
must demand it.
That's why movements like Black Lives Matter and all of these things where actual people didn't stop with George Floyd. They didn't stop with Breonna Taylor, and not exactly what should have happened happened, but movement happened because the Black community didn't give up. Mm-hmm. Really is what it comes down to. And I just want to point out that it's usually a lot of white people being like, whatever, fuck it, who cares?
Yeah. Yes.
So fuck you. Mm-hmm. That's all. You can take that out or leave it in, whatever.
Oh, I'm gonna leave it in.
Yeah, so JFK, last episode next week. I have a feeling it's going to be a road trip length episode, so I hope y'all are ready for that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm ready.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed. Let us know on social media, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.